It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. Take Command Instant Reaction Show. Craig Hoffman, Logan Paulson as usual. And after usual, just another Commanders win. Here we are at Northwest Field. They're 4-1. All right, that's it. That's the show. They just win now. See you. Bye.
Yeah, no, seriously. But it's the style of winning is unusual.
It's wild, man.
In the NFL, like, even if they were winning games, this would be exciting. But they're winning in this, like, demonstrative way, kind of put an exclamation point on every single game and beating teams that, like, that's a really good defensive football team in Cleveland, and they did a really nice job handling what they brought. And obviously what they did against Arizona in terms of containing Kyler Murray, it's just great to see them stack wins, but also big wins, kind of forceful wins, declarative wins. And I think that's what makes this so special.
I think sometimes you see results and you're like, okay, is this sustainable? Are they doing the right things? They just getting results. We see this all the time. And I mean, soccer is like the worst of this. It's all soccer analysis. Like, oh, but were they in good form?
Yeah.
And it's like, the reason you care about that is, like, are you actually playing well, or are you getting lucky? And in football, obviously, because it's a higher scoring, less random sport, like, there's less of that. But I think the thing that's really exciting is they are both performing really well. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to talk about how much of today's defensive output is in a game where they, you know, outside of the late touchdown, hold the team single digits for most of the day. Like, how much of that is good performance Washington versus the fact that Cleveland's offense is terrible. But like, what are they supposed to do? Have them finish the scoreboard with minus 15? Like, that's not how this works. I do want to start with the offense, though, and I will throw out this stat that unfortunately it's my favorite stat that we don't actually get to use, so I'm just going to throw it to you guys here on the Instant Reaction Show. Had they gotten one more score, which obviously they kind of shut things down with 12 minutes to go,
that was wild.
Yeah, so Jaden doesn't play the fourth quarter. Had they gotten above 35, it would have been the first time since 1983, Logan, this franchise scored 35 three games in a row. So that is the rare air they are existing in. Instead, they only get 34. And I think really for today, it's they did it differently than they have the previous, you know, 3 weeks of these big offensive performances. What did you see in terms of how they were able to be so productive?
Yeah, I actually thought that Cleveland came out with a really good plan. I thought Jaden Daniels, at least in the first quarter, looked a little bit unsettled. And I thought, you know, kind of after watching the Cleveland film and stuff we talked about on the preview show, he was going to need to be creative in terms of finding explosive opportunities versus pressure. And I think that first completion to Terry is a perfect iteration of that. Like, Cleveland was not going to let you run the football. They were going to take away the quarterback run. They had a really good plan for that. They were playing the safeties nice and tight. They were like, we dare you. And so the one way to get that is you're not going to be able to hold up in protection usually versus that kind of blitz structure. It's, I got to extend the play as a quarterback. And then I love that he had the composure to kind of escape the pocket, get his eyes downfield. Terry's on the scramble drill. And I think that is like the perfect example of what needed to happen. And then how do you find your next explosive? It's kind of, you know, it's a big run by Austin Eckler. It's an explosive play to De'Ami Brown. That was kind of the nature of the game. And then as the game went on, they were able to kind of fall into, you know, the game flow we've come to see from this offense, which is kind of, you know, a little bit more, it's a methodical, fast-paced, methodical in the sense that it's just kind of like, you know, first down, first down, first down. But the tempo's up, the defense is fatigued, they're not bringing pressure, they simplify looks, and then Jaden Daniels just looks like himself from a couple weeks ago. But once they were able to weather that storm, that's when you get to see kind of this offense in the iteration I think Cliff wants it. And the question I have about this game is, are they able to get there at any point if the defense doesn't play so good, or if Cleveland's offense isn't so bad? And I think that's the thing that I come out of this game, you know, it's like very exciting, but there's always this question where it's like, if, you know, versus Lamar Jackson, for example,
right,
when they score 14 points, what does that do to us offensively?
Right. What happens if they have to play from behind? Like, we'll figure that out then. Yeah, right. You know, but at the very least now, like, these are the questions you keep asking, and the higher level the question, the better the team is. And oh, by the way, no matter what that answer winds up being, they're already 4-1. So from a mathematical standings, they only play 17 of these, one more than they used to, but like 4-1 through 5 is pretty darn good.
Pretty darn good.
I will point out another fun next gen stat for you. Jaden Daniels in college had zero completions over 50 air yards, which is kind of crazy because of how many explosive, you know, big plays he had. Yeah. But we know that you know, Joe Buck had that stat on the Monday Night Football broadcast a couple weeks ago when he hit Terry for the big one that was like 60 yarders or whatever it was. The one to Terry today, I think, was 56.6. So he's got 2 and 3 weeks as a pro over 50 air yards. And I think that one is so wild, Logan, because one, it shows a growth, and Dan talked about this a little bit after the game. You know, week one, he drops his eyes against the blitz. He's running. Like, that's still really effective, but how quickly can we get him to realize there's plays available with your arm if you keep it up? And to not only see that, but him off platform is something that you saw on college tape some,
not like
but
this,
not though. Like Caleb Williams did, not like some of these other, you know, you're not like, oh, that's the Patrick Mahomes or like Kyler Murray. We talked about some of the, you know, the quarterback horse type of throws. 56 yards on the air, rolling to your right, flicking your wrist after slipping a defender is pretty darn good for quarterback horse. So his ability to continually grow is it's pretty special, and it kind of makes your mind wander in terms of what he can be and how quickly and what he already is, frankly.
Yeah, and you know, it's so funny you mentioned the draft. Like, I've never watched more film on a quarterback than I watched on him because I kind of had a feeling this is the direction the franchise would go. And you understood how good he was. Like, you saw the quick release, you saw the footwork, you saw the different arm angles, you saw all that, but you're always like, man, how strong is his arm really? How good is his ability to create lower body torque, to your point? And it's better than I could have ever imagined. Like, I knew he probably had it in the bag because he's a twitched up athlete, but it's to see him throw the football with that kind of accuracy and power and ball velocity, you know, from every type of platform, it does remind you a little bit of CJ Stroud. You know, when you watch film of CJ Stroud, his ability to get off platform and throw, have the ball go down the field, because it's not that Mahomes caliber arm. It's not the flick of the wrist of Aaron Rodgers. It's a very fundamentally sound throwing motion. And I think it's very, very special. And I think, but all of that physical ability kind of, you know, is awesome, but it's his composure. It's him. It's his decision-making. Even when it's flustered, like there was the third down, it was a third and short, and they kind of run that boot action and they've got the tight end on the corner, the guy in the flat, it's covered up perfectly. Terry's kind of streaking along the back of the field there. And instead of kind of trying to contort and make a throw, hey, what's the most important thing on third and short? Get the first down, get us a new set of downs, get the first down. I just thought, like, he's always kind of aware. He never seems too frazzled. And that's the thing I think that gives me the most optimism for his growth moving forward, is that he's wired mentally, seemingly through the first five games, the right way. And obviously there's still a lot of tests ahead of them, but yeah, man, he handled himself really well. And I think today was just an exceptional example of that, because it was rough early. They were bringing pressure. He looked a little unsettled. And then for you to find your rhythm, great job by Cliff too, but it just speaks to the kind of guy he is.
Yeah, no, I thought that, I think as a second drive of the game, I don't remember second or third, but the one where they're backed up in their own end down there, right? And there's back-to-back play. This
cool. It's cool, the fun part.
Yeah, so if you're listening to the podcast, it's behind us to the left. just imagine that visually in terms of where we are in the press box. If you're watching us on YouTube, it's over there.
It's over there.
But they're backed up over there, and Jaden has the miss to Terry down the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
And then on third down, he had Zach wide open and he missed him.
And that's when you're like, is he okay? Is it too much?
I'll tell you what though. That's when I went, he's fine.
Really?
Because I was like, he's going to hit throws.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's seeing the field, the fact that he was no longer seemingly bothered by the pressure, he just missed it. There wasn't like actually there wasn't a ton of, you know, guys around his feet or anything on that play. He just missed the throw. And that was kind of the thing a couple weeks ago when they started opening it up and he missed Terry on a couple early. And you're like, okay, he's seeing the field. Mm-hmm. He's doing the right things. He's now got to hit the throws, and he's Jaden Daniels. He's pretty accurate. He's going to hit the throws. And sure enough, he comes back, and the next drive, they're backed up again, and it's third and 13, and that's when he hits Terry for the big one. But also, he has to, you know, face a little adversity, right? He throws this could have been way worse. He throws a pick in the red zone. Yeah. That wasn't very good.
Yeah.
But from pretty much that point on, he just was super locked in. And, you know, he obviously the completion percentage came back down to a humane number today, as opposed to the superhero that he's been. But he also had, you know, 80 yards rushing on good decisions to rush. Had he not missed the fourth quarter, probably would have been the second quarterback ever in franchise history to have a 100-yard rushing game. Robert Griffin's 138 versus Minnesota, the only one. I'm sure you remember that one.
I do remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only time a Washington quarterback has ever rushed for over 100 yards. And I feel the very need to say yet on that one, because it sure feels like he could get that sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and again, like, it wasn't always perfect. It wasn't always pretty. He didn't make every single throw. The pocket wasn't always the cleanest, but he just found a way. And I think there's something really comforting about that, even when you're talking about, like, plays and, like, offense. And, you know, we always like to kind of get in there with the pen and be like, oh, this is the great play designed by Cliff and great feel here and understanding the down and distance and what the defense is going to do. But also, it helps. It doesn't help. It is the thing. When you have a quarterback who can drive playmaking the way he did today, it covers up a lot of ails. And I think that's the thing that I just keep coming back to, is he just has shown in every game, completion percentage or not, an ability to make plays when you have to make them. And that's with his legs, that's with his arm. And it's very comforting as a fan. It's very comforting as a fan of offensive football to see a guy that can do that. Because when you watch the greats, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Patrick Mahomes, there's five, six plays in a game where they say, oh, I'm the only person that can make this play for you. And it's not there in the offense, but I made the play. And I think that's what we're seeing from him. And it's nice to have a playmaker like that at the position.
Yeah, and the runs are easy to see. There's a couple throws he makes in this game. I think it's a third down. He just rips the ball to Terry, who makes this unbelievably tough catch. Yeah. So that's like one where I can't wait to go back and watch it on tape. Like, was that actually a good decision? He's so quick that it didn't matter what the coverage was, whether it was the right read. Like, he made the play. So that's something for Tuesday. The other thing that I just wanted to mention on the offense, this really is team-wide. These dudes are playing hard and they are. In a way that you can really see it. McNichols, again, just how physical. Hard he runs. Eckler, though, how hard he runs. Obviously, the blocking,
Oh, yeah, the receivers, too. Like, yeah. Luke McCaffrey on B-Rob's touchdown blocks the corner for 5 seconds. Bryson Tremaine on the draw at the end of the game is blocking a guy downfield for what seems like an eternity. And
the hustle. I mean, Terry on one of the big runs, he's out there in front. By the way, it's grotesque that the person he's trying to run in front of 60 yards downfield is Miles Garrett.
Crazy, man. He's crazy.
But you just see it from everybody.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing I remember talking with Kyle Shanahan about 2012 in 2017 after it had passed a little bit. And I was like, well, why did that work? And obviously there's the schematic element. There's what Robert brought as a runner. And then the thing that he kind of came back to is like, I never had coached an offense to that point that played so hard. And that's really cool when you see shades of that. And when you go back and watch that 2012 film, you see guys, busting hump down the field, Pierre Garçon running 30 yards across the field to block a safety on an Alfred Morgan run, Corey Lichtensteiger down the field. And you see that here. You see the offensive lineman out in space putting it on the line for the runner. You see the receivers blocking. You see tight ends blocking. We've talked about the physicality of that group. But Zach Ertz, who at this point in his career is not an overly physical guy, he's putting his helmet on people. And I think that's, again, it's a cultural thing. It's like, this is how we play as a commander. And it's special to see that because you're going to constantly punch up. No matter how talented the opponent is.
You know what else you need?
What?
A white guy wearing number 82.
There we go.
That's what you need.
That's what we need.
Ben Sinnott, William Paulson. Nice to meet you. All right. Defensively, I'll just ask the question straight up. How much of this was good Washington defense versus the Cleveland Browns offensively are an affront to football?
Obviously, they did a lot of really good things. And Joe Witt Jr. had a really good plan. And guys are doing what they're supposed to do in a way, which we haven't seen here for a couple of years, playing the correct coverages, being in the right position. But I have never seen an offense that is so unimaginative and that puts your guys in such a difficult situation on a down-to-down basis. I was on the sideline just bemoaning to Fletch the entire broadcast, like not in the broadcast, but during the break. Like, I've never seen an offense like this. And again, they were not this bad against Las Vegas. They've had better games this year, but this game,
they tried to tell us they turned the corner last week.
Yeah, and you just—it's
like Wile E. Coyote paints the thing on the—they turn the corner into the Wile E. Coyote tunnel and just smash right into it.
And again, the Commanders deserve a lot of credit. I love what Joe Witt Jr. did in terms of blitz packages, in terms of finding matchups. But as a play caller, the one thing that really jumped out to me for the Cleveland Browns, Stefanski, is one of the things that this team's had the most difficulty with is pullers. You run trap, you run power, you run counter, you run gap, you run a pull to the perimeter, and we have a hard time fitting that. Most NFL teams do because you're changing gap structure. The first time they ran it was in the third quarter, and it was a 35-yard run. And they did, and they were like, and I made a joke to Bram. I was like, apparently they were holding that play till the third quarter, really wanted to guard it. Yeah. They're running all these runs that are easy to fit. They're running these pass concepts that are easy to cover, and the Commanders did a great job. Like, they could have held them to 0 points.
Yeah, they did. They really did a great job. They arrived with physicality. They made plays on the ball. Yeah. Like, they did all the things you're supposed to do if you're set up for success. They succeeded. You can't, like we said off the top, like, what are they supposed to do? Have them score negative points?
Yeah.
But, man, that's a much easier test than everything else they've had to do this year.
Yeah, and so I think that's the thing that's really hard about this is really an outstanding performance by the defense. Frankie Luvu, Bobby Wagner, Jeremy Chin, the two guys inside, Payne, Allen, did a great job. Dorrance Armstrong, given DeJuan Jones work, everybody did a great Benjamin St. Juice. I thought another great day. Sanders still probably his best game as a Commander.
Yep.
All that stuff is true, but it can also be true that that was one of the worst offensive performances I've seen. One of the worst called games, one of the worst scheme games I've seen in a very long time. And so that's also going to play a factor in their success.
No doubt. You do see bones, though, of like things that you like in this team.
Oh, 1,000%.
100% take confidence from this. Like they move Frankie Louvillo all over the place. And one of his, I think it was his first sack, he just lines up over a guard, hits him with a spin move, and destroys Deshaun Watson. Like, that is good stuff. And to see the creativity start to come together, to see guys being able to rush from different spots 100%. On the line, to see the physicality, because, I mean, talk about hitting. Special teams, they hit. Like, Dan referenced the Jeremy McNichols hit in the postgame presser. I think it was on the first kickoff of the game or second kickoff. McNichols just absolutely waylays someone.
McNichols, Ballore, the guy they brought in, number 57, is one of the most prolific special teams players. Just physicality, right?
Yeah. And that carried over the defense.
Bryson Tremaine's in for Tyler Owens, had a great day. You know, that Larry Izzo-led group is, you kind of wander off and don't watch. I have to watch every kickoff because those guys are putting on the line for this team. And so, to your point, though, like, it brings that energy and that enthusiasm to the defense.
Yeah, and then Lubu goes out there and smacks someone. Shin goes out there and smacks someone. Quan, like, it just, they had it today.
And schematically, I think the thing you referenced there with Joe Wood Jr., the pressure packages, this is what we thought we'd see much earlier in the season. But this is the first game they've really been in a lot of third longs, right, where they felt comfortable calling that stuff. So I think this is what Commanders fans can expect from Joe Witt Jr. and this defense from a pressure standpoint. From, again, they're not the four horsemen of the apocalypse over there, but they have enough tools and enough weapons to kind of say, hey, we can create favorable matchups in the rush lanes, and especially as our guys in the back end play better coverage. Like, they all played great leverage today. They did a great job in terms of matching concepts. Chef's kiss, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, let me share something with you that I don't know if you heard. And I asked Quinn in the post game, like, because obviously last week they rotated their corners quite a bit, right? Mm-hmm. Forbes played some outside, Sanders still played some outside. He and Noah switched inside, and today Noah started on the nickel. Mikey started outside, mm-hmm. opposite of BSJ, and they stuck with it. And I was like, was it just because it was working? He was basically like, yeah, why would you find a hot hand? Like, it wasn't reflected. You know, I wasn't trying to specifically ask, like, hey, why didn't Emmanuel Forbes play? Because a former first round pick. Like, I wasn't doing that bit. I literally wanted to know, like, you know, you probably went into the game with one plan. Mm-hmm. You don't do that thing that you did last week. So why? And it was the most obvious answer, but you want to confirm. But then I followed up and was like, what is it about Sainer still that has allowed him to play outside when on paper, based off his size, he shouldn't be able to? And Dan kind of thought about it for a second, and he goes, you know, I don't know if self-awareness is the right term, but like, he really knows himself. And so I think that is something. I'm like, then self-awareness seems to be your term.
Yeah.
But I think that is something that Mikey has shown a growth with week after week of understanding, like, okay, I am my size. I have my skill set because he's super quick. He arrives with physicality. So all this stuff. So how do I set myself up to win? And Dan talked about him playing on or off in like certain situations. And so there is clearly an intellectualism about how this back end is starting to develop. I also think Noah being a bigger body in the nickel for run support is probably something that is going to help them over the course of the year. But I thought that was a really interesting answer, and hopefully it's something that they can continue to do, because really, like, Mikey's had a couple of moments playing outside corner as a rookie when he played nickel most of camp. Hmm. And the majority of those moments came against Jamar Chase. All in all, that's a pretty good start through five games for Mike Sanders still, if you want to think about it that way. And the fact that he's getting better like he is, you know, I think it does help you feel better about this defense moving forward.
Yeah, I think that self-awareness term is really interesting, because they've talked about, you know, they've been really supportive of Benjamin St. Juice. And one of the things that, you know, when you talk to Kime, when you talk to people around the team about him specifically, is he is self-aware. He's deliberate. He's focused. And I think you get Mike Sandersill, who's that way. I think when you watch Percy Butler play, he's playing that way. Frankie Louvillo, Bobby Wagner, you're getting a defensive guy composed of guys where it's important to them. And they understand what they need to do to be successful and how to be successful and be critical of themselves. And I think that's why, that's another thing that's really encouraging, is the quarterback is that way, but everyone around the team is that way. And so I think that's why you see this positive trend executed so well. You know, there's a little bit of luck, a little bit of skill, but getting the right people is the foundational element of that. Yep. And making sure the leadership's in place. And so, again, I go back to how the roster was constructed, you know, with the veteran pillars, the Bobby Wagners, the Zach Ertz, the Austin Ecklers, and obviously they're playing good football, but how that's brought the other guys along that, you know, we talked about this during the draft, that have the commander on their chest. And I think that's what you're seeing. And then the guys that are playing for this team that are from the old regime are kind of wired mentally that same way, which is pretty special. So
no doubt about it. All right. That'll do for our instant reaction show today. Just save the score a couple more times. People would probably be into that.
Yeah.
They won by a million.
Yeah.
34-13, the final. Be talking about it on the radio tomorrow, starting at 4. 10 observations from the game. We call it first and 10, so do not be late to the radio show unless you have to be, and then you should listen to the podcast. We'll be back for our podcast, this show, on Tuesday for the Take Command tape review show. We'll obviously preview Baltimore. Huge, huge tilt. Probably the game of the week in the NFL. I mean, we know
that's
NBC,
kind of what it feels like,
NBC wanted it for Sunday Night Football, and CBS was like, you can absolutely buzz off. So we will preview that one on Thursday. I do believe we're going to have a player on the show, the radio show tomorrow, so looking forward to that. And hopefully we can get a couple more surprises for you this week on Take Command as well. For Logan, I'm Craig, and we will see you next time. Thanks so much for joining us here on YouTube.